So often startup entrepreneurs will say the top three ways that they get startup financing is the three F's: friends, family, and fools. But it's actually bank financing that's more difficult for them to get. And for women, it can be even more difficult than male entrepreneurs to get bank financing.
Why is that?
I think it's because of what banks look at in terms of developing the risk portfolio for giving out loans. And in developing countries, often what they look at is what the collateral requirements look like. And it's really access to land, it's access to real property, access to buildings. And by access, I mean having your name on the title. Because of the way property regimes look and women's access to land, women actually have far fewer titled real property than men, and therefore it's more difficult for them to leverage that in terms of collateral to get bank financing.
Laws all around the world keep women from entering or at least climbing through the workforce and the business world. Tell me a little bit more about some of those.
The Philippines often comes up and how they change their night work restriction. The call center industry wanted women to be able to work at night because they're calling households in the United States and the United Kingdom. And so they came to the government and they said, we really do want you to change this law. And the question is, what are you really protecting them from? If the women want this, if there's a safe way for them to go back and forth at night, and if the call center industry wants this, then there's no reason for this additional protection to be in place. Of course, another great example is in Cote d'Ivoire. The family code actually stated that husbands could stop their wives from working if they felt it was not in the interest of the household. They could go to the employer, for example, and say, I don't want my wife doing this job, and the employer would fire the wife. So this is something that recently the government of Cote d'Ivoire has reformed, and the way they did it is they essentially equalized it. So now either spouse has the right to stop their spouse from working if it's not in the interest of the family. And what that does is it gives women greater bargaining power.
How do challenges to these laws walk the line between promoting women's participation and maintaining cultural sensitivity?
This is a process and a sequence of events. So you don't come in and prescriptively say, okay, you need to change this whole set of issues. We work with civil society organizations, women's organizations, organizations of women lawyers, organizations of women notaries, and they often know much more on the ground what is the step that they want to take. And that's the issue that you start with. So you don't start with the most difficult thing. I think you start with the thing that there's most consensus on.
How do we shift this discussion from this is something that is meaningful down the road to this is a priority?
The numbers are incredibly, incredibly telling. For example, looking at increasing women's labor force participation to male-specific levels, there's some country-specific research that shows it would raise GDP in the United States by 5%, in Japan to 9%, in the United Arab Emirates by 12%, and in Egypt, if you were to increase women's labor force participation to male labor force participation rates, you'd increase GDP by 34%. Often the argument comes about that if we have more jobs for women, they're actually taking away jobs that men could have instead. But I don't think that's the right argument. Actually, what happens is if you have more women working, you're actually growing the whole pie for the entire economy. So there are more jobs for everyone.
What can governments do to help incentivize women to engage in that work?
Just as policies can keep women out and unintentionally keep women out, they can also encourage them to come into the workforce. So how are tax systems set up? Do they incentivize secondary wage earners or do they tax them more heavily? Because women often tend to be secondary wage earners. How are they treating part-time workers? You know, is there a good maternity leave regime in place? Is there a paternity leave in place? I mean, these are things that can really incentivize women's participation in business, participation in paid employment, and, you know, other things that governments can do is incentivize women's financial inclusion. You know, look at the policies that they have around access to finance, including opening savings accounts, basic business accounts, what kind of documentation is required, and do women have the same access to that type of documentation that men do?